Hi, this is Mac of Mac's List. Find Your Dream Job is presented by Mac's List, an online community where you can find free resources for your job search, plus online courses and books that help you advance your career. My latest book is called Land Your Dream Job Anywhere. It's a reference guide for your career that covers all aspects of the job search, including expert advice in every chapter. You can get the first chapter for free by visiting maxlist.org/anywhere. This is Find Your Dream Job, the podcast that helps you get hired, have the career you want, and make a difference in life. I'm Mac Pritchard, your host and publisher of Mac's List. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Becky Thomas and Jessica Black from the Mac's List team. This week, we're talking about how to make the most of your first 90 days in a new job. You're about to start a new job. Congratulations. What happens next during your first 90 days can make a big difference in your success. Our guest expert this week is Joey Price. He says to make a great impression during the first 3 months on a new job, you need to do certain things. Joey and I talk later in the show. Every career has its downturns. I've certainly seen my share of professional ups and downs. In fact, I've been fired twice, and I know what it's like to cash that last unemployment check. Becky has found a resource I wish I'd had when I was out of work. It's a 6-part approach to how to turn setbacks into advantages. She tells us more in a moment. You're hired for a job with a startup that lets you use the biochemistry skills you studied in college. But because of a change in company organization, you're moved into an operational role. How do you best describe on your resume your biochemistry skills, especially since you haven't had a chance to use them recently? That's our question of the week, and it comes from listener Alex in Madison, Wisconsin. Jessica shares her advice shortly. All right, let's, as always, check in with the Mac's List team, Jessica and Becky. And Becky, you're up first because you're always exploring that internet and looking for those websites, books, and tools our listeners can use in a job search or in their careers. So, Becky, what have you found for us this week?
So this week, I want to talk about something that everyone experiences in their career, which is setbacks. I think one of the hardest parts of just building up a career over the decades that we all go through the workforce is dealing with setbacks. Everyone experiences them. You get a fancy degree and you can't get a job, or you get stuck in debt. You love your job, but you get laid off unexpectedly. You make progress on one path and then something changes and you have to start over. Our professional lives are really mired with challenges, and we all have to face them. And many of us, myself included, have been in a place where it all just feels like it's too much and like, why am I trying so hard? So professional challenges are also opportunities to build something that I just learned about called transformative resilience. Ooh. It's more than just moving past a challenge, which is how most people think about resilience, is just like hardening yourself against the trials and tribulations of the world and just pushing through.
Yeah, right. Just sucking it up. And,
Yeah. And it's more about, it's a lesson in, I'm going to quote from today's resource here. It's about how to better operate in and positively impact the world around us. So we can deal with the challenges that we face and learn from them and almost incorporate them into our approach to life and sort of choices and things.
I'm going to wait until after you explain this, but I have a question about what transformative, if a different approach to transformative resilience, if that is part. Anyway, I'll let you go.
Yeah, let me. I want to sort of walk through some of the steps because
I'm excited. This is really interesting.
I found this article in the New York Times. It's called "The 6 Steps to Turning Setbacks into Advantages," and it outlines the key lessons in a new book called "Type R: Transformative Resilience for Thriving in a Turbulent World." So the book should be good because the article itself provides some really interesting ideas that can be applied to our careers and our lives outside of the workplace as well. So I'll quickly go through the six steps that they outlined in the article, and these are pulled from the book. So step one, you're in your comfort zone. So you're defined by sort of the structures in your life, right? Everyone can relate to this, right? You've got your family, your possessions, your job title, whatever is sort of central to who you are. Step two is disruption. So something happens to disrupt the structure in your life. You have to question and rethink key aspects of your life. So, for example, you get laid off and you may have to scale back on expenses and change your lifestyle. Key here is to reach out for external support as you're going through this disruption phase. Step three, chaos ensues. You struggle to make sense of your shattered reality. As the article said, you're typically going to be experiencing like sadness, grief, sometimes like denial when you're sort of at that phase. I went through all of these emotions when I was laid off sort of unexpectedly from a previous job, and I totally relate to this. During this stage, it's really important to not let your brain run away with you. Like, don't dwell on all of the terrible, you know, possibilities of what may happen. You're going to end up homeless, all that stuff. Live in the now and try to focus on what's real. Step four, a catalyst emerges. So you experience an epiphany, a new idea, a fresh perspective that helps jumpstart your transformation. In the layoff example, maybe you realize you don't actually like the career path you're in. You find a new and better calling. Something like that. So step five, you're moving towards something new, experimenting with your sense of identity and place in the world. You're sort of building a new reality in this phase. Maybe you start a new training course or land a great job. Step six, you become comfortable with change. So once you've experimented with your new identity and reality, you reach a point where everything has changed and you're okay with that. You aren't as reliant as you were before on those structures to sort of define you, and you become more sort of accepting of change and more resilient in that way. With each, quote, transformative change, we learn that we can get through it and really discover like our strengths along the way. Mm-hmm. And just come out stronger with each setback. You can actually sort of strengthen and learn and discover new strengths within yourself.
Yeah.
And this was pretty cool. I would definitely recommend everybody sort of reading through the article in detail, because it gives some really cool examples of people who have been through tough situations and what they did and how they got through it and really turned it into an advantage. And for a lot of professionals, like especially if you're unemployed or going through like a tough time in your career, it's really easy to put blinders on and push through and do that sort of tough it out resilience. But I think it's really valuable to sort of change your thinking on this. So like thinking through when you're experiencing what you're experiencing and really noticing the lessons learned and the challenges that you are able to overcome, and really giving yourself that awareness and sort of respecting what you've been through and being able to sort of just respect that process that you are strong and you can get through things and you don't need to be afraid, I think can be really invaluable as you move forward in your career. And as we all move forward into the future, like resilience and embracing change is just going to be more and more necessary to have a long and successful career. So I just really like this idea, and I think that
I
people should check
that.
It out. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it all.
Yeah. I think I'm going to get the book and just see how it is.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. I love that. I think, like you said at the beginning, everyone has experienced setbacks and everyone will experience more setbacks. Mm-hmm. And so being able to develop that resiliency of not just, you know, gritting your teeth and bearing through it, but learning how to evolve and adapt to your circumstances and your scenarios and being able to not only just like get through it, but thrive mm-hmm. while doing that as well is really important mm-hmm. because, yeah, change is inevitable. And yeah. So that's great. I love it.
Yeah. I love this model too. And it seems like it would apply not only to professional experiences like a
yeah.
job loss
no,
or not
that's
getting
what I was
picked,
thinking too.
But also other life experiences too.
Oh,
is that
yeah.
true, Becky?
I would say so. I mean, I think that you know, in the grand scheme of things, your career is a big part of your life, right? You're the same person in your career as in your home life.
Right.
And you deal with things in similar ways. You know, your personality is still intact. So I think it's definitely applicable to all areas of life.
Yeah, definitely.
Good. Well, it's a terrific model. And I'm looking forward to reading the story. Well, thank you, Becky. And if you've got an idea for Becky for a resource you think we should share on the show, please write her. Her address is becky@maxlist.org. Now let's turn to you, our listeners, and Jessica, who is in charge of answering your questions. So Jessica, what is in the mailbag this week?
We have a question this week from Alex from Madison, Wisconsin, and he emailed us with a question, and he gives a little bit of background before the question. So I'm going to read everything that Alex sent in here. So he says, a little bit of background first. I graduated with a degree in biochemistry and gained skills there and in my first job in molecular biology techniques. Experiments, technology, everything I was hoping for. But my first and current employer is a startup. And after a year or so, there were changeups in the organization and personnel. I'm a loyal employee and love who I was working with. And although I did cause a fuss, they changed my role to work in a more operational and management role. My question is, how can I apply and show the skills I use to learn on my resume when it's been a little while since I've used them and I never got to fully master them? It also doesn't help that most of the jobs require experience with certain equipment techniques as their main requirement, and I don't feel comfortable applying them without that mastery. So this is a really good question from Alex, and I'm going to disseminate this a little bit to just kind of restate this in a clearer way. It sounds like to me, Alex got a degree in biochemistry, did a little bit of work with that degree, and then in his current role started out using some of that experience, but has adapted and been moved into a different type of role to focus more on the operational and management side. That's not the hands-on focus that he was originally in and really enjoyed. And so as he is sort of looking at keeping his resume current, he wants to know how to share his experience on his resume to continue to show that he has those biochemistry skills when it's been a little while since he's actually used them. And he also doesn't feel comfortable just kind of stating that he has those skills when he hasn't used them in a while, which I think is very honorable. And it's a good question to really think about. This is a complex question. And it's a very common occurrence within small organizations, both startups and nonprofits, to kind of have an all hands on deck mentality of you may be hired for a particular position, and then roles change and adapt. And even if the role itself doesn't change, there's still sort of everyone does a little bit of everything. And so I think that it's understandable that his role has changed into being a more operational standpoint. And I do think that there are ways to both highlight this on your resume, but also bring the biochemistry skills that you want to be using back into the forefront of your life, both within your company, but also on the side, kind of doing that to keep those skills relevant and develop those. So one question I have for Alex is whether there are opportunities to use these skills that you want to use in your current job. I assume that this has already been something that he's brought up because he mentioned that he pushed back a bit when he was moving into the operational side of things. But I think that having a conversation with your bosses would be really crucial here. I really appreciate the loyalty that Alex mentions that he has with his company, and obviously having a team that you really appreciate working with is something that causes a lot of that loyalty, and that's invaluable. You want to find a team that you really love and all of that, but you also want to do work that you really enjoy. So I think that kind of finding that compromise and having those conversations to be able to maximize that is really crucial. So first of all, I would say communicate with your current boss about your goals and let him or her know that you really enjoy working with this organization, with the team, but that, and you are, you know, you are happy to take on new roles and kind of be a team player and provide that organizational, operational side of things. But that you really loved the parts that you mentioned that you really loved, the experiments, the technology, things like that, and ask for ways to utilize those in your current job while continuing to do the role that you're hired to do. But also ask for support and maybe a timeline in transferring some of these responsibilities to someone else to free you up to do more of the work that you're interested in doing and that you went to school for. So having those conversations about your goals and kind of a conversation about timeline of when to expect to implement some of these things. I would say definitely in terms of the resume side of things, I would say definitely highlight all of the work that you've done already, Alex, with your experience doing biochemistry, and find ways to show that you're still using some of those skills, even though it's not, maybe not directly, but being able to, again, I don't know what kind of startup this is. I don't know what kind of work that they're doing, but I assume it's something related to biochemistry if he got hired there in the first place. And so, so finding ways to, maybe you're on the management side of things, but you're leading other folks who are doing the actual implementation. And so that's still a very valuable skill that you can share your experience in biochemistry. So highlighting those types of aspects on your resume, and then I would also find other ways to continue to grow those skills. Alex mentions that he doesn't feel like he has a solid mastery of these skills yet, that he wants to continue growing. And so I think that finding ways to continue doing the things that you want to do in that industry, in that aspect, finding volunteer and engagement opportunities to do that type of work. There's always other organizations that need support. And I don't know very much about the biochemistry world, but I would assume that there are spaces to be able to find that, or clubs or something like that where you can share both your knowledge, but also share information with other people who are doing those on a regular basis and grow your skills that way, find other opportunities. And yeah, I don't know if the reason he is looking for this advice on how to highlight these on his resume is because he is looking for other opportunities, but that is also a factor if your current workplace isn't very receptive to the conversations or the ideas or just your interest in staying in the biochemistry side of work, that is something to think about of looking for other opportunities, other organizations that maybe you can do a little bit more of that work, but also highlight your operational and management skills that you've acquired at this job that will be valuable for other jobs. So do you guys have any other feedback?
Yeah, I think that last point was a good one, because he could possibly differentiate himself from other sort of biochemistry specialists who might not understand the operation side, and that could be a differentiator and sort of a way for him to stand out. Mm-hmm. But I was rereading his question, and he's still in his like first role or employer after college.
Right.
And it sounds like he really does want to be doing this biochemistry, right? He mentioned sort of everything in the first assignment at that job was what he wanted, and it was
exactly.
all about the techniques, the experiments, technology. He said, everything I was hoping. So
that's
I think that he needs to be true to himself, and if he can't do the things that he really wants to do at this job, then he needs to move on.
That's exactly my gathering from that message as well, is that talk to your employers and let them know that this is you love this organization, but you mm-hmm. are not happy doing the operational side. You would rather be doing right. the hands-on implementation. And how can we find a way to make that happen where he can stay there, but also do what he wants to do.
Yeah. Really clear about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I think that's good that you reiterated mm-hmm. that because I think that's really important.
That's the way I read it too, Becky. And when he has that conversation, and if it doesn't look like there will be opportunities to do the kind of biochemistry work he wants to do, mm-hmm. I also saw in his question that he has a clear idea of other jobs that interest him, and he's concerned because they require experience and skills that he either hasn't had a chance to acquire or practice. So kudos to him for knowing where he might want to go next if this role doesn't work out at the startup. I think future employers will recognize at a startup, and you made this point, Jessica, that it is kind of an all hands on deck approach, and mm-hmm. everybody does a little bit of everything. I think that will be appealing to many employers. And if he's looking for ways to either practice or acquire those skills, particularly using equipment, in addition to, you mentioned volunteering, if there are courses or certifications he can get that matter to the employers that interest him, that might be another thought to consider.
That's a good point. Just furthering the education or just the practice, at least practicums, maybe. That's great advice.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Jessica, and thank you, Alex, for your question. If you've got a question for us, please write Jessica. Her email is jessica@maxlist.org. You can also post it on our Facebook page. Just go to MaxList on Facebook or call our listener line. We love voicemails with questions. That area code is 716, and then it's Job Talk. If we use your question on the show, we'll send you a copy of Land Your Dream Job Anywhere. And we'll be back in a moment. When we return, I'll talk with this week's guest, Joey Price, who will discuss how to make the most of your first 90 days in a new job. If you're listening to this show right now, there are two things I know about you. First, you're a fan of podcasts. And second, you're looking for tools and tips that can help you get a great job and get ahead in your career. That's why I'm excited to announce MaxList's newest free resource. And it's designed for podcast listeners like you. I just published the latest edition of my Top Career Podcast Guide. It's a directory of the best podcasts for finding a job that matters and building the career you want. This is our most complete career podcast guide ever. You'll find 78 great shows from around the world. From resume writing advice to salary negotiation tips, you'll find great shows to help you tackle any job search challenge. Get your free copy of Top Career Podcast Guide today. Go to topcareerpodcasts.com. Again, that's topcareerpodcasts.com. And now let's get back to this podcast. Now let's turn to this week's guest expert, Joey Price. Joey Price is an award-winning human resources executive, business coach, and professor. He's the founder of Jumpstart HR. It's a consulting practice for small businesses and startups. Joey is also the host of Business, Life, and Coffee, a weekly podcast, and the author of Never Miss the Mark, Career Search Strategies Provided by HR Pros. He joins us today from Memphis, Tennessee. Joey, thanks for being on the show.
Mac, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And as you know, Joey, our topic this week is how to make the most of your first 90 days in a new job. Why are these first 3 months so important, Joey?
The first 3 months are incredibly important, Mac, as I'm sure you know from prior experience, that you're really trying to establish that connection with your employer. You're also trying to figure out, does this role really fit for me? And it's within those 90 days where, you know, the microscope is really on you. Your boss, your team, they're evaluating really the possibilities for you to scale and grow and make an impact in the team. And so while that lens is on you, it's up to you to make the most of that opportunity and learn as much as you can about the company and add value right away.
And candidly, some people don't make it through the first 90 days, do they?
No, and that's why this time period is so important. It's still called in many organizations the probationary period. So that's literally the time where the organization is more inclined to let you go if it doesn't seem like you're going to be able to latch on.
Now, we're going to talk in a moment about how you can stand out in those first 90 days. But before we get there, Joey, let's talk about some common reasons why people may not make it through those first 3 months. Why are people let go?
Well, honestly, Mac, it's a two-way street. So as much as it is about being let go by the employer, it's also the new hire feeling like this isn't the place for me. So I'd like to briefly touch on those two sides of the coin. Let's start with why people are let go. One being that they don't adequately express the ability to do the requisite skills of the job. Another reason would be that they don't seem to fit the company culture. So, for example, if you could do the work, but you're just not a team player in the way that your team needs you to be successful, that might rub your team the wrong way and your supervisor the wrong way. And then the third reason why people get let go is because they could in some way have a rift with a team member and not quite get along. So those are some three reasons why people would get terminated early on. So why they might leave the organization willingly. One is if the job is not communicated, if the job that was communicated originally is not what they experience on the first day. It's very important, that whole interview process, it's a courting phase. It's a time where the employer is communicating what expectations are going to be like and what the role is going to entail. And if that doesn't match up with reality, a lot of job seekers these days are in the position to say, you know what, I could take my talents elsewhere.
Go ahead.
Okay. And then another reason why it doesn't work out, honestly, a company culture may stink. With that whole courting phase, it may be described as an awesome place to work. But then when you get there, you realize the people here don't even like working here. And so they leave the organization because they just don't feel like this is the place that they want to be. And then thirdly, this is more of sort of like a technical thing, but if the benefits package is not as advertised, or if it's not as great as it could be or should be, or what a person's used to, they might try to take their talents elsewhere.
I'm so glad you brought up the point, Joey, that it is a two-way street. That's because it is a time when new employees are checking out the employer, and they may be surprised by things that didn't come up in the interview process or when they did their homework and their due diligence. Well, let's talk about what people should be doing right in those first 30 days. You mentioned culture. Why is it important to understand culture right away, Joey, when you're a new employee?
Think about when we talk about culture, think about if you are traveling and you arrive to a new destination and it's completely different than what you do. In order for you to survive as a traveler in a foreign land, you're going to have to be in a position where you are able to get along with people quickly, figure out how to get things done, and, you know, build a team around you. So that can apply in the workplace, where culture is important because every company does things, they do the same thing in different ways. Culture is important because that is really the essence of what the organization is about and what they're marching towards. So people can discount culture and think, oh, I'm just here to do my 9-to-5. I know what skills I have and what skills I can bring to the table. But no, the culture is really the essence of what you should be looking to be availing yourself to. And a way that you can do that is get to know the people, get to know the mission, and get to know what your supervisor thinks is most important for the job.
I'm glad you brought up understanding what matters not only to your peers, but to your supervisor. Let's talk about the importance of building a relationship, Joey, with a new boss, as well as other leaders in the company. How much time should you pay attention to this, particularly during those first 3 months?
Well, to be honest, your relationship with your supervisor should be the primary thing that you focus on in a new job. When we think about why people leave an organization, the number one reason is because of the relationship with their supervisor. And so if you're not working to build that relationship and understanding what makes your boss tick, what your boss likes, how to communicate well with your boss, you're going to have a harder time adjusting, and your boss is going to find a harder time to justify giving you a promotion or a raise or giving you opportunities. Your relationship with your supervisor is the number one important thing that you need to take into account when you go on to a new job.
What's your best tip for about how to build that relationship with that new supervisor?
The best thing is to really be consistent. Bring your full effort to work. Be known as a person that's reliable. And that is the number one way to build trust, is to have that reliability. And then secondarily, I would say, you know, keep your eyes and ears out for how your boss responds to other people, and what they, how your boss responds to other people and what they like and what they dislike about other members of your team.
Yeah, you mentioned trust and reliability, and I've seen that come up again and again with employers I talk with about their new employees and the people who stand out among the new hires. Let's talk about the work, Joey. You're a new employee. You're given assignments. How should you approach it? Is it about checking tasks off a list, or should you take a different approach?
Well, you know, Mac, that's a great question, and I'd say it is dependent upon the way your manager likes to see things get done. I really stress that manager relationship, because I might give you one particular strategy and a listener takes that as the gospel, and that could completely flop with the manager that they have in their dream job. And I know that this podcast is all about preparing people for success. So I kind of, without dodging the question, I'd say it really does depend on your manager's style. If your manager is a person who values getting things done, then yes, you want to make sure you're attentive, crossing things off the list, showing that you've added value in that way. If your boss is a person that values chemistry and teamwork, you want to make sure that you're showing yourself as a team player and you can be flexible with the work that's been given to you. So I don't want to prescribe one particular way, but I do want to say focus on how your manager likes to see things get done.
That's almost a recurring theme as we talk, the importance of managing up and knowing what your immediate supervisor wants and how they like to do work. Isn't it, Joey?
Yeah, it is. And we have moved from that industrial age where everything is done the same way, that whole factory type of work environment, where knowledge workers are more nuanced. And so the skills required and the soft skills required to get a job done vary from not only company to company, but position within a company. And so that unique organic chemistry of individual, task, and manager is something that is unique to any relationship at work.
Now, every job comes with a description, and it's a list of roles and responsibilities. But do employers really know what they want that new employee to do? How much room is there for a new worker to define the job?
Matt, that's exactly why the manager relationship is so important, because employers don't know. Trust me, I'm on HR side of things. I see people onboarded into an organization, and I've seen working with clients where the job descriptions are literally copied and pasted from an online source. Employers say they want one thing, but then that can change in the hiring process. It can change based on a particular candidate and the skills they bring to the table and how they want to make that fit within the organization. So it's really this living and breathing thing that changes from moment to moment. But the primary thing I could say is, as long as you can get along with your boss and show that you have the skills to get done whatever is needed, then that's a huge value add.
So don't be surprised if you're asked to do something outside of that job description that you talked about in the interview.
Absolutely. That's why there's that little dot that says other duties as assigned.
Well said. Well, Joey, what are some other steps that people should take in those first 90 days to stand out and not only have a great review at the end of those first 3 months, but to position themselves for success at the company?
Sure. So I know that I've been giving a lot of tips about getting to know your manager and putting your best foot forward in that regard, but don't neglect your team. I'd advise you to take time, go to lunch with some of your team members, get to know how they work, get to know what it's like at your organization, and build rapport with your team, because you never know how you're going to need to rely on them in the future. Another thing is really study deeply the mission of your organization and what it's all about, so that you can continue to add value in meaningful ways. And another thing I would do is remember that a job is a marathon and not a sprint. So don't burn yourself out trying to put your best foot forward, but be consistent.
And one thing I'm not hearing you say, Joey, is that good work alone will speak for itself.
No, that's definitely not the case. You've got to be a likable person.
Okay. Well, it's been a terrific conversation. Now tell us what's next for you.
What's next? I am speaking at the SHRM annual convention in Chicago in June, and I'm super excited to talk about a topic similar to this, which is how to do employee engagement for this me first generation. And I'll continue to be a social influencer for Southwest Airlines and new episodes of the podcast.
Great. Well, I know people can find your show, your podcast on iTunes, as well as your book, Never Miss the Mark, Career Search Strategies Provided by HR's Pros on Amazon. We'll be sure to include links to both of those resources in the show notes, as well as your website, joeyvpricehr.com. Joey, thanks for being on the show.
Mac, thank you for having me.
We're back in the MaxList studio with Jessica and Becky. I'd love to hear your reactions to my conversation with Joey. Do you want to talk first, Jessica?
Sure. Yeah. He gave such great, great concrete advice on how to get into a new job and really put your best foot forward right away. And, you know, he talked about I think it was great that he sort of reiterated the crucial component of that first 90 days of making sure that, and I really liked his emphasis on it being a two-way street of, you know, that first 90 days is very crucial, but it's crucial in both ways of it's the employer feeling out the employee and the employee feeling out the employer. And specifically, I really thought his point about the interview process being so important to be able to suss that out. I think that was something that I kind of thought about when he was speaking about, you know, people having those moments during that 90-day period of realizing that it's not a great fit, and how having a longer intensive interview process is really important to help suss that out and answer all those questions that you might have before you get in there. And we here at MaxList have, and your other company too, Mac Pritchard, has a really extensive interview process, but I think it's for good reason, where we get to meet every person on the team, and there's lots of opportunities for questions and to get to know the company culture and ask questions about the job description specifically, and opportunities like that, which I think is not always, I think it's becoming more of a norm that other companies are doing the same thing of having longer interview processes and more intensive ones like that. But I do think that as maybe as intimidating as that sounds, it's actually really beneficial to be able to get a really good concrete sense of the team and your supervisor and the other people that you're going to be working with, the job description, the general company culture as well, to be able to know the employer gets to get a good read on you, lots of touch points, lots of conversations with you, and you as the job seeker get a lot of those questions answered for yourself because, again, that is that two-way street. And so I thought that was his emphasis on that was really important and just, I don't know, I was just thinking about how I really appreciate our intensive interview process. And I think that is something that could be implemented in other organizations to be able to alleviate some of that, the sort of turnover in the first 90 days, either by the employer or by the employee, not having a good fit. But I also, I want to hear what Becky thought, but I, one more thing I thought, he gave a lot of good, like really excellent concrete, advice and tips on how to develop a really positive relationship with your supervisor. And being able to understand your employer or your supervisor's personality style and not the like Myers-Briggs or whatever, like you don't need to get that far into it, but like communication style and what that supervisor values and how to relate on that, you know, very important step to be able to have a really good working relationship. And you know, I think that I think some of his advice could potentially come across as like, you know, be exactly what your supervisor wants you to be. And I don't think he meant it that way, but he meant to understand your supervisor to be able to maximize your relationship. So, anyway, I thought he just had a lot of really great advice.
Yeah. I was going to say the same thing about getting that relationship started off on the right foot, mm-hmm. because I think that is, like he said, the main reason why people leave is the relationship they had with their manager. Like yep. That's huge.
It's huge.
So yeah, I think just like really digging in those first 90 days and asking those questions and, you know, doing as much as you can to suss out what your manager needs and how they best like to receive work and receive feedback and give feedback and all of that stuff that's really essential to have a healthy relationship for like the long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I loved his emphasis on the relationship with the manager. Mm-hmm. When I was coming up in my career, my 20s and 30s, the conventional wisdom was look for early victories in your first 3 to 6 months, you know, something that would make you stand out. Mm-hmm. And I think there's value to that. But as the years have gone by, I think it's much more powerful to concentrate on that relationship with the supervisor, mm-hmm. figure out, you know, what she or he wants and how they like to work. And it's not that you're changing to mimic them. It's you're just trying to understand their needs. And if you make that investment early on, it will continue to pay dividends.
And just starting to make their life easier
right.
as quickly as you can.
Yeah. 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 And managing up is just crucial. And mm-hmm. when I see the people who have had the most success in their careers and gotten the most out of new jobs, it's the people who have figured that lesson out. Mm-hmm. And the ones where it doesn't quite fit, and maybe they don't leave in the first 90 days, maybe it's at the end of a year, it's because they didn't build that relationship with the manager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, terrific. Well, thank you both. And thank you, Joey, for joining us this week. And you, our listeners, for downloading today's episode of Find Your Dream Job. And don't forget to check out the 2018 edition of the Top Career Podcast Guide. You'll discover 78 podcasts, including the one that Joey hosts, that can help you get hired and have a great career. Get your free copy of the Top Career Podcast Guide today. Go to topcareerpodcast.com. And join us next Wednesday. Our special guest will be Mary Blaylock. She'll explain how knowing your strengths can help you get the best job fit. Until next time, thanks for letting us help you find your dream job.